Let's make. I'll say we're in a bit of a complicated Rashi, so let's try and make it clear because we must finish this Rashi today. It all goes back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says Dine Momenus Beshloisha, and as the Gemara explained, that's only referring to Gezelois V'Chavolois, but not to Hoidoyois and Halvois. So we're trying to work out, what does that mean? It doesn't apply to halvois. What does not apply to halvois? If you try and suggest that I don't actually need three dayonim for halvois, Gemara says, surely that can't be. You always need three. So that was suggestion number one, dismissed. What was suggestion number two? Suggestion number two was, you're right, we're not discussing the amount of dayonim, but rather the quality of the dayonim. That it's only gezeilos v'chavolos that require three mumchim, whereas a halvo'o does not require three mumchim. That is the suggestion. So we always have to have that headline in front of us. That's what we're debating. Is it true that halvo'os does not need three mumchim? So any monetary argument concerning a loan, albeit that you have to have three dayonim, but you do not have to have mumchim. That's the question. Now, if you remember, what we began yesterday was this very lengthy Rashi. So let's just recap what we've learned, and then we'll try and finish off the Rashi. The Gemara's Kasha coming up now is going to be one moment. In the parasha of Shemachinom, which is not the parasha of Halvah, the parasha of Halvah was much later on, Im Kesef Talva. But earlier on was the parasha of Shemachinom. In that parasha, we have the words Kihuzeh. Kihuzeh is where we learn Moide B'miktas makes a shvur. If you claim from me that I owe you $100, meaning that you loaned me $100, and I say, well, I only actually borrowed $60. So obviously the 60 that I admit to, I've got to pay up. The remaining 40, I make a shvur. How do I know? That's all derived from Kihuzeh. But strangely enough, Kihuzeh is written where? It's not written in the parasha of Halvav and Kesef Talbot. Rather, it's written in the parasha of Shemachinom. What's it doing there? Just to explain the question a little bit more, and this is where we're up to in Rashi. A Shemachinom, if I'm guarding something, albeit for free, you come knocking on my door and you say, fine, I'm back from my vacation. Can I please have my cow that I deposited with you to look after? And I say, I'm very, very sorry to tell you, it got stolen. A Shemachinom does not pay for an item that was stolen, unless he was negligent. But if he says, I wasn't negligent, he does not pay. However, he still needs to make a shvur. I've got to take an oath. What is the oath that I've got to take as a Shemachinam? I hereby swear that neither was I negligent, nor did I misappropriate the item that I was supposed to be looking after. If I make that shvur, then indeed I'm exempt. Now, what would be in the following case? I hope everybody's bearing with me. Imagine you go away and you deposit with me two cows, not one. You come back knocking on my door and you say, I'm back from my vacation. Can I please have my two cows back? And I say to you, what do you mean two? There was only one. Don't know what you're talking about. So that is a type of moed b'miktas. I admit to having one cow. The other cow, I deny. So what would we say? Oh, you have to make a shvua because you're moed b'miktas. But let's remember that a shemachinah makes a shvua anyway. Hashem Mechinam is never exempt without making a Shvuah. Which means, therefore, that the whole concept of Moida B'Miktas is irrelevant with regard to Hashem Erev, because Hashem always makes a Shvuah. So therefore, that further strengthens our question, what on earth are the words Ki Hu Zeh doing in the parasha of Shemah? What does Ki Hu Zeh teach me? The Moed B'Miktas makes a Shvuah. Very nice. That's an interesting chiddush with regard to a halvah, but it's not relevant in the case of Shemah. So L'Chaira, what must be the conclusion? The conclusion that we must reach is this very fascinating principle, two words, Eruv Parashiyos. We've got to do a cut and paste job. We have to arrive at the conclusion that the words Ki Hu Zeh are, as it were, misplaced. They do not belong in the parasha of Shemah, rather they should be cut and pasted to where they do belong, which is Halvah. Now, of course, this begs the obvious question, so why on earth did HaKadosh Baruch Hu write these words in the parasha of Shemah then? The answer is, I do not know. But for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them in the word in the parasha of Shemah, and we have to now work out ourselves, but actually they don't belong there, and have got to be cut and pasted onto the parasha of Halvah. Now, if you hold of Eruv Parashiyos, then what are you going to tell me? That the details written with regard to Shomer are actually out of place and they really belong in the parasha of Halvah. For example, Ki Hu Zeh. But one moment, there's another example as well. What else is written in the parasha of Shema? The word Elohim. The word Elohim, as we've mentioned a number of times already, is a reference to Beis Din, but not only to Beis Din, specifically what type of Beis Din? Mumchen. This is where we get stuck. Because if you're going to tell me that we hold of Eruv Parashiyos, then just like Ki Hu Zeh is misplaced and really belongs in the parasha of Halvah, so too L'Chaira, also the word Ho Elohim also should belong into the parasha of Milvah, of Halvah, which means that what? That Halvah requires Elohim, i.e. Mumchin. So how can you tell me back to our Mishnah that it's only gezelos v'chavolos that require mumchin, but halva'o does not require mumchin, but the whole source of the principle of mumchin is Elohim, which albeit is not written in the parasha of halva'o, but we have the cut and paste story. Why do we have the cut and paste story? Because of Eruv Parashiyos. So if you're going to adopt the principle of Eruv Parashiyos, and L'Chaira you're going to take it the whole way. If the details of Shomer Chinam really belong in Halva'ah, then just like you cut and paste Ki Hu Zeh, I should have to cut and paste Elohim as well. Which means, in the final analysis, that in the parasha of Halva'ah, you need Elohim, you need Mumchin. So how can you tell me that the Mishnah says otherwise? That's a complicated question, but that is the Gemara's kasha. Now let's look at that very lengthy Rashi, and I think the Rashi will now be plain sailing. We'll go back to the beginning of Rashi. Ikosova, if you hold, it's a machloikas, but if you hold Eruv Parashiyos Ksiv Kan, the Ika Leman the Omar. There is a particular opinion, the Omar Bahagoizel Eitzim, who says in the parak called Agoizel Eitzim at the end of Bava Kama, Shaha Parashiyos Haksuvois Be'ele HaMishbotim, those parashas that are written in Parashas Mishpatim, Ma'urbavois Hein, What does mu'urbavos mean? Like the word oroiv, taroives, they are mixed up. Yesh mikra kosov, the parasha zu, because there is a pasuk written in this parasha, she'enoi yochoil lamoid bo. It cannot stand there. It cannot possibly belong there. Elo, the parasha acheresi. It must belong elsewhere. Again, I repeat, why then did the Torah write it in the wrong parasha? I do not know. Will be an example. Kagoin, quote unquote, asher yoimar kihuze. What do we learn from the words kihuze? Di alfinon mine, we learn from them moide b'miktsas hataina, that if somebody admits in part to a claim, yishova, he has to make a shvua. Shekosav b'shem mechinom, comma. Those words are written in the parasha of Shem Mechinom. However, lav Ashem Mechinom koi, but they don't refer to Shem Mechinom, even though they're written there, but they don't refer there. Why not? The Shemrim, because guards, afal pi sheloi hoydu b'miktsas, even if they do not admit in part, nonetheless, chayavin lishova. They still have to make a shvua. So I don't need meide b'miktsas to obligate a shomer to make a shvua. He's chayavin a shvua anyway. So meide b'miktsas, therefore, has no relevance to a shomer.
I just ask, what's the shvua he has to make? I keep hearing that.
The shomer always has to make a shvua that I was not negligent, that I didn't misappropriate. Irrespective of whether he admitted in part or denied, he's always got to take that oath. Therefore, I don't need Maida B'miktsas to place a shvua on his head. Therefore, it must be Dohidoya Miktsas Hataina, the principle of Maida B'miktsas. So where must it belong after all? A parashas de'im kesef talve, quote unquote. On the parasha of Im Kesef Talve, Koi, it refers to there. It's written in the parasha of Shomrim, but it applies to the parasha of Halva or Dahosam, because over there, where's there? In the case of Halva, that's where Moide B'miktsas is very, very relevant. Why is it relevant? What's the halacha in the case of loan, not shomrim? What's the halacha if I claim that I lent you $100? It's as mentioned. If you admit in part, well, the part that you admitted to, obviously you pay, and the part that you deny, you've got to make a shvua. What's the halacha if you deny the whole thing? I claim from you that I lent you $100 and you deny all $100. What's the halacha? That's not called Moide B'miktsas. You didn't admit in part, you denied all. And paradoxical as this might sound, what's the halacha there? He does not make any shvua whatsoever. That's called Koifer Bakoil. Now, that sounds almost counterintuitive. If I admit in part, I've got to make a shvua on that which I denied. And if I deny everything, then I don't make a shvua? The answer is psychology. Why is it psychology? Rashi's about to explain this. Because what's the chashash over here? What's the concern? Why would I ever want to obligate a shvua? Because I'm concerned that maybe he's not telling the truth. He's not telling the truth, he's a liar. So we have a psychology. However daring and chutzpahdik a person is, he would not have the audacity to deny everything. If I come to you and say, listen, I lend you $1,000, you say, you didn't lend me a penny, that's such a tremendous chutzpah that you must be saying the truth. Because were you to be telling a lie, you would not have the audacity to deny all. What would you do? You would hedge your bets. you would say, well, I didn't quite borrow 1,000, I only borrowed 500. So therefore it's not counterintuitive. If you deny all, then the psychology dictates that the probability, the likelihood is you're telling the truth. Because were you not to be telling the truth, you wouldn't dare deny everything. What a tremendous chutzpah. This guy lent you money and you deny ever knowing the fellow. So we come out with the following conclusion. In the case of a loan, of a halvor, when do you make a shvua? Only if you're a moedah b'miktas, not if you're a koifah b'koil. So if that's the truth, then the words ki hu zeh, where do they belong? Not in the parasha of Shomrim, as we explained before, because in the parasha of Shomrim, whether he's a moedah b'miktas or not, he's got to make a shvua anyway. But in the parasha of Halvor, there it finds its place. Why? Because there it's only when you're a moedah b'miktas. In fact, you make a shvua. But if you are a koifah b'koil, then you do not make a shvua. So there, by being a moedah b'miktas hataina, that's when you're chayav a shvua. That's what it's so important to put it in the context of Halvor. Look at Rashi. It is there, meaning in the parish of Halvor, where we require hoidoy b'miktzas. Ve'i loy moide klum, comma. Because if, however, he does not admit to anything, he denies all, chazaka, we have a principle that im tainus hateveya emes, if the claim of the claimer was really truthful, if you really did lend him money, he wouldn't dare deny all. Loi hoyo yochel zeh, this one would not be able, laho is ponov. What does laho is ponov means? Azus ponim. He would not have the audacity to be so chutzpedik negdoi against him, veloima, to say, loi hil visoni, no, you didn't lend me anything at all. A person would never do that. Hilko, therefore, afilu shvua loy boy. Therefore, if you really deny all, I say that's too audacious. You would not deny all had there really been a claim, and therefore you're completely off the hook. The only time you're chayav a shvua is when, if you're a moedah b'miktzas, avol b'pikodoin. When it comes to a pikodoin, imagine I knock on your door. Reb Larry, this is the question you asked before. If I knock on your door and I say to you, excuse me, can I please have the cow that I deposited with you when I was on vacation? And you deny all. And you say to me, cow, I don't know what you're talking about. You know what the halacha is in that case? You do have to make a shvua. Why, when you deny all, in the case of a loan, you do not need a shvua? And when you deny all in the case of a deposit, you do make a shvua. And the answer is, because in the case of a loan, it's much more of a chutzpah to deny all. Why is it a chutzpah to deny all? Because you did me a chesed. Somebody who lent me money did a gemilas chesed. I'm going to deny the whole thing in front of him. That is so outrageous that a person would never do such a thing unless it was really true that he doesn't owe anything at all. But in the case of a pikodoin, when you put your cow in my stable, you didn't do me a chesed at all. So it's not that much of a chutzpah to deny all. So even when I deny it, I'm concerned you're telling the sheker and you've got to make a shvua, which means therefore in the final analysis, as we said before, moedah b'miktzas has no relevance in the case of shomrim. Because you're always mechuyev to make a shvur. Whether you deny all, whether you deny in part, whether you claim it was stolen, whatever happens, you've got to make a shvur. Well, if whatever happens, you've got to make a shvur in the case of a pikodin, of a deposit, and a shomer, then I don't possibly need the shvur of moedah b'miktzas in the parasha of shomer. Where do I need moedah b'miktzas? I need it in the parasha of Halvor. There really is a difference between denying all and denying in part. Says Rashi, Aval bepikadoin de leke gemilos chasodim. In the case of a deposit, there's no chesed. When you deposited your cow in my field, you didn't do me a chesed. To the contrary, I did you a chesed. Therefore, meiz ponov. So in that case, the person was more than happy to deny all. And therefore, ubo yishvua. That is the introduction. So that is the principle of Iruv Parashiyos, which tells us that ki hu zeh cannot find its place in the parasha of Shomer. It does find its place in the parasha of Halvah, which we are calling cut and paste. Having made that introduction, now Rashi gets to the punchline. V'hai tana de masnisim. The Tana in our Mishnah, Isvirale Nami, if he also holds of this particular stance, Dahai, that these following words, quote unquote, Asher Yoimar Kihuze, quote unquote, if he also holds that Bahalvo'o Mishtoi, comma, Mishtoi means it's talking about, it's discussing. If the Tana in our Mishnah also holds that ki hu zeh is actually discussing a halva'ah, which means I'm cutting and I'm pasting, hare ne'mar, but it also says, quote unquote, Elohim b'haikra. In the very same pasuk, in the very same pasuk that it says ki hu zeh, it says Elohim. Again, if you have that chumash in front of you, if you don't, I'll read it out. Chof beis vov, the Torah writes, Asher yoimar ki hu zeh ad ho Elohim yovei dvar shneim. So in the very pasuk that it says ki hu zeh, it also says what? The word Elohim. And what do I derive from the word Elohim, says Rashi? The mashma mumchin, experts. How does the word Elohim indicate experts? Loshin srora verabonus. Elohim, which of course sometimes we refer to means God, but essentially Elohim means master. Rabbonus, k'dematargeminon, like the Targum says on the pasuk, re'einu saticho Elohim lefaroi loshen rabbonus. So when the Torah says that you've got to go to Elohim, what does that mean? You've got to go to the master dayonim. Who are the master dayonim? Mumchim. And where is that written? In the very same pasuk of ki hu zeh. But haven't we already established that the ki hu zeh posuk has been cut and paste? And where is it being pasted to? It's been pasted to the parasha of Halvah. Well, if you cut and paste the entire posuk, then the word Elohim, albeit written in the parasha of Shomrim, but we're now going to cut and paste it to the parasha of Halvah. So ki hu zeh and Elohim, the entire pasuk is, as it were, cut and paste. It's taken out of Shomrim, it's put into Halvah. So for what's the conclusion, therefore? Says Rashi, the last two words. V'liboi mumchin, question mark. So I should require mumchin in the case of Halvah. How can you tell me that the pshat in our Mishnah is dinei mominus b'shloisha? Meaning, you have to have three mumchin in gezeilois v'chavolois, but I do not need three mumchin in halvois. Why do you not need three mumchin in halvois? You're right, it doesn't say the word Elohim, from which mumchin is derived, in the parash of halvois, but by virtue of the cut and paste principle, it does say Elohim in the parasha of Halvah. So how can you say that Alva doesn't require three mumchim? Ramesh Azali. Ramesh Azali, you had a question? You're on mute.
You're on mute.
Did we not already use Elohim to prove that you have to have three witnesses for Dine Mamani, whether we're talking about the Mumchim or not?
One second.
The previous page or...
You don't mean three witnesses, you mean three Dayonim, correct?
Right, three Dayonim, three judges.
Oh, so this is now, you're really introducing the next line of the Gemara. The word Ho Elohim, from which we derive the principle of Mumchim, there is another very important halacha that we learn from Elohim, and that is, the word Elohim is written how many times in that parasha? Three times. That's where we get the magic number three from. We've discussed the magic number 23, the magic number 71. We never actually spoke about the Makoir, the source of the magic number three. The Makoir of the magic number three is by virtue of the fact that Elohim is written three times. In which case, I know it's a little bit complicated, but if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. We are in serious trouble. And this is exactly the Gemara's question. What is the serious trouble that we're in? If we hold of ear of parashis, meaning, are we going with the cut and paste or we're not going with the cut and paste? If you're going with the cut and paste, so where does the word Elohim appear now? In the parash of Halva. Well, then I'm sorry to tell you, Halva should require three mumchim. How can you say it doesn't? And if you're not going to go with a cut and paste, then how on earth do you know that a halva requires three dayonim at all? The three times that it says Elohim is also not written in the parasha of halva. It's written in the parasha of shomrim. So surely I need cut and paste. The bottom line is we are making an enormous split. What is the split that we are trying to make? We are trying to suggest that in the case of Halva, on the one hand, you need three Dayonim, but on the other hand, they don't need to be Mumchim. That's the split that we're making. Gezeilois v'chavolois, you've got to have three Dayonim, and they've also got to be Mumchim. So I need these two criteria. We're trying to say that in Halvois, you need one, but not the other. Yes, you need three Dayonim. No, you don't need the Mumchim. This is the Gemara's kasha. How can you now make that split? After all, both the magic number three and also the principle of mumchim, both do not appear in the parasha of Halva'ah. So the only way you can put it in Halva'ah is how? By cut and paste. So I'm sorry to tell you, it's all or nothing. Either Halva'ah requires both three Dayanim and also Mumchim, or it doesn't require Mumchim, but then it doesn't require three either. Therefore, says the Gemara, I can't understand. Mamonavshach, do you hold of Ir of Parashios, cut and paste, or you don't hold of Ir of Parashios? If you hold of cut and paste, well, then you need three Mumchim. If you don't hold of cut and paste, well, then I don't need three at all. So how can you make this split saying, yes, I need three. No, I don't need mumchim. Well, I'm sorry. It's either cut and paste or it's not cut and paste. Have a look at the next Rashi. Ve'ikosovar. And if you're going to tell me the high krav, this parasha of shomrim, lav, underline the word lav, lav b'halva o mishtoi. If you're going to say, no, it's not discussing Halva'ah. We don't do a cut and paste. There's no ear of parashios. Well, then I'm sorry to tell you, shloisha minalon. So how do you know I need three? B'Halva'ah. Ha-mitlosa. It's only from the fact that it's written three times. What's written three times? Elohim. Nafkalon le kamon. We're going to derive later on in Daf Gimel. That's why you need three. But I'm sorry to tell you, v'ho Elohim ba'alvo loiksiv. But the Elohim principle is not written in halva at all. So how did you ever know? How do we know that you need three dayanim in the Beis Din? The answer is because it says Elohim three times. Excuse me, where does it say Elohim three times? Not in the case of halva. Where is it? In the case of Shomrin. Ah. So who told you that you need three dayanim in the case of halva as well? It must be cut and paste. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, if it's cut and paste, you want to take the whole package. Well, then I need mumchen as well. What are you going to say? No, 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 you don't need mumchen. We don't do cut and paste. Well, if I don't need cut and paste, then who says you need three? A phenomenal kasha of the Gemara. Yeah, Rabbi Larry.
Is there an argument to be made that the only time you need three is when there's mumchen? Because three you learn from Elohim. Elohim is mumchen. So therefore, without mumchen, there is no three.
Right. That is exactly the Gemara's question. So if I don't need mumchen, then I don't need three. So how can you make a split and tell me that in the cases of the halva, yes, I need three, but no, I don't need mumchen? What's going on? In the case of the halva, neither is the principle of three written, nor is the principle of mumchen. So the only way to get it is through cut and paste, which the Gemara calls Erev Parashis. So can you please make up your mind, says the Gemara. If you hold of Erev Parashis and you're doing cut and paste, well, then you should require mumchen as well. And if you don't require mumchen because you're not doing cut and paste, well, then you shouldn't require three either.
What does it mean if you hold of Erev Parashis? I mean,
because it's
a machlokes.
That's a machlokes, Rashi said in the beginning of the very long Rashi. De ikka l'man da'oma. There's a machlokes whether you hold of Erev Parashis. Meaning, there is one opinion that says that this ki huzeh pasuk is not misplaced. And it does belong in the parish of Shemim. How? So, whatever, Ayin Shom, have a look in Bava Kama. So therefore, that's the Gemara's question. What is the stance of the Tana of our Mishnah? Does he hold of Erev Parashis? Well, then he goes to the lock, stock, and barrel. You've got to take the three and the mumchen. And if he doesn't hold of Erev Parashis, then you don't take the mumchen, but they don't get the three either. A quite phenomenal kasha of the Gemara. So therefore, basically, we're all the way back to square one. We still, after 2 weeks of Zman, still don't understand our Mishnah. Dinei mamonas b'shloisha, but not with halvois. What does that mean, not with halvois? Halvois doesn't need three. We were told, no, halvois always needs three. Ah, so what does it mean? It doesn't need mumchen. What? It does need three dayanim, but it doesn't need three mumchen. How can you split the cake into two? You either take everything or nothing. Okay, we'll have to hold it over here in suspense. Ms. Hashem will continue next time, all being well.
Yeah. Okay.